You are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research Disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a Senior Economist here at CommBank, and today I'm joined by Gareth Aird, our Head of Australian Economics. Gareth, good to have you on today.
It's nice to be on to unpack the national accounts.
It is. Now, it's been a very busy week in the Australian economy. As you said, we did receive the fourth quarter GDP print today, so that gives us a really great idea about how the Australian economy finished 2020. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the Reserve Bank of Australia after we, as you said, unpack the national account. So just at the start, so how did the Australian economy finish last year?
Well, look, it finished the year in a lot better position than I think most people thought when we headed into the COVID-induced lockdowns back in April and May. I mean, I think today's print really just highlighted how strong the economic recovery was over not just Q4 of last year, but really the second half of 2020. You know, we had a big contraction in output around the middle of the year, but, you know, since then, the economic recovery has genuinely been strong. I think it surprised a lot of forecasters. It's definitely surprised the Reserve Bank and also the government. And I think I think the news in today is pretty good when thinking about the economic outlook, because we know that the Australian economy finished 2020 with quite a bit of momentum and in a much better position than I think many people thought.
So we had a 3.1% lift for the quarter, which took annual growth down to minus 1.1% year on year. So for the calendar year, how did we finish up?
Yeah, look, so the calendar year is impacted a lot by actually what happened in that June quarter. So that huge contraction in the June quarter is part of the calendar year result. And GDP overall in 2020 ended the year down around 2.4%. But I think the message really in today's figures was that growth in both the September quarter and the December quarter was really, really strong. I mean, we've had sort of insights that could be the case given the remarkable improvement in the labour market. You know, we're seeing in our internal data that spending picked up materially, but you know, you want to see those national accounts to get the full picture. And you know, the message is basically that the economy has done really well, all things considered. And you know, the fact that GDP is down by just 1.1%, as you mentioned, through the year, also means that it's down 1.1% on its pre-COVID peak, because the December quarter of 2019 was the peak. We had that small contraction in GDP actually in Q1 of last year, but I think it's, you know, it's a really good result, you know, considering everything that's gone on in the economy. There's plenty of things I think to like in the data, and you know, of course we can unpack that over the course of the podcast.
It's interesting when we look at the state-based breakdown, pretty much all states but New South Wales and Victoria back to their pre-COVID level. So it's just at a national level that would obviously take a couple more quarters. What were some of the main drivers of growth in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, look, so a few things probably to note there. I mean, normally we would sort of unpack the economy from an expenditure side or an income side or production side, but I think it's probably worthwhile just having a look at the, as you touched on, the state outcomes today, because the sharp rise in GDP over Q4 was very much driven by Victoria. You know, a lot of Victoria was in a lockdown or had, you know, pretty significant restrictions imposed on it through the September quarter. But because a lot of those restrictions were eased in the fourth quarter, there was actually a big lift in state final demand in Victoria of just under 7%. So that was behind a lot of the growth in the quarter. I mean, for the rest of Australia, state final demand was up 2.2%. So still a good result, but not quite as strong there. In terms of the components on the expenditure side, it's very much been a rebound in activity that's been consumer led. Household consumption rose sharply again in Q4. It was up by 4.3%, which built on a pretty big lift in Q3 of just under 8%. Probably worth saying though that household consumption is still down quite a bit on where it was, you know, 12 months ago, down some 2.7%. So we've still got a little way to go, but clearly there's been a big lift over the second half of last year. Dwelling investment posted a pretty strong rise, up a little bit over 4%. And that's something we've been flagging to our clients, is that there's a big lift in renovation activity underway at the moment. Our lending data has been really strong there, and there was evidence of that in the national accounts, with renovation activity up a bit over 5%. New build is also up. Business investment rose by a little over 2%. And, of course, public demand, which has been pretty strong right through COVID, was up a little bit over 1%. So there, quite a lift up in public investment and a more modest increase in current spending. So basically, when you look over the domestic side on the expenditure front, I mean, everything was pulling in the one direction. Maybe we can touch on the income side next, but I think, just when looking at overall the domestic economy, you can see that pretty much everything has been moving in the same direction over the fourth quarter of the year.
Now, we can also unpack it from, as you said, the income side and the production side as well. Before we get to the income side, where there are certainly some fascinating developments taking place because of government support, the farm sector in particular had a very strong fourth quarter. We saw the agricultural industry grow by about 33% in the fourth quarter, mainly because of a very, very large wheat crop, a record wheat crop in 2020. So that is definitely helping that sector recover post the drought conditions we have seen in the last few years. Now, turning to the income side, we had very strong nominal GDP growth. We had very strong terms of trade. What else is happening on the income side that's worth highlighting?
Yeah, look, the income side of the GDP equation has been, or the national accounts rather, has been pretty fascinating. There's been some really unusual dynamics in the data over 2020, and that's largely picking up the big impact that government has had in terms of transfer payments to households and businesses. And in a lot of ways, it means that taking a literal read of some of the numbers can actually distort the picture. So to give you an example there, the ABS told us today that corporate profits were actually down by a bit over 5%, despite the fact that the economy improved a lot and sales were up. And the reason that corporate profits declined was because that they were artificially inflated, if you like, a lot over the June and September quarters due to government cash payments. And of course, those payments were tapered going into Q4. It's a slightly similar picture in terms of household disposable income. I mean, that was actually down on the quarter by a bit over 3%, as was real household disposable income. But I think what's important there is to look at what's happened over the past year, and both gross disposable income and real household disposable income are actually up a bit under 5% over the year. So the message there is that there's still a lot of money going into the household sector in the form of income. As we've been flagging a lot through the COVID period, that has actually resulted in a huge amount of stock of savings being built up in the household sector. We had estimated that number would be around $125 billion, but we did that obviously without having sight of today's national accounts. But given we got the data today, we actually could firm up that figure, and we now put that at $120 billion in terms of additional savings accrued by the household sector above and beyond what's normally saved. So some really fascinating dynamics going on there. I think a lot of it basically comes down to the fact that we've had a lot of public support for households and businesses through the COVID period. That tends to show up as a boost in income. And then when thinking about the economic outlook from here, we know that a lot of that income, particularly that went into the household sector, didn't find its way into spending, and that'll provide a genuine tailwind on consumption right through this year and potentially into next year.
So apart from, I guess, the path of the virus, I think one of the biggest questions that people have been asking as we look into 2021 is how is the Australian economy going to evolve in its recovery as we transition from that public sector-led support through those income payments into the private sector?
Well, look, we think it's going to go pretty well. A lot of the forward-looking indicators that we look at on the economy are actually sending really positive signals. A lot of the leading indicators, for example, that relate to the labour market suggest that jobs growth is going to be quite robust from here, and that'll see the unemployment rate drop. A lot of the business surveys and the consumer surveys suggest that things are going to be pretty good. You've got consumer sentiment sitting well above average levels. You've got business surveys like the PMIs, the NAB Business Survey, all suggesting that you're going to see ongoing lift in activity. I mean, last week we saw the ABS put out the CapEx survey, and that showed that firms are expecting to lift capital investment quite a bit over the next financial year. So yeah, we think that transition from public to private sector support is actually going to go pretty well. It's really that you only need the public support when you've actually got something going on in the economy that's holding it back. And COVID was the classic case there. I mean, we'd never seen anything like it before. And to get the economy through that period, we needed a huge amount of public support. But the economy is getting an increasingly amount of clear air from COVID. We think by the time the vaccine's rolled out, COVID won't be a problem for the domestic economy. And then you sort of just go back to the way things always were, where you don't need that additional stimulus going to households and businesses for decent economic outcomes. And overlaid sort of all of that, you've still got interest rates at incredibly low levels. Monetary policy is highly accommodative, and that's having a real positive impact on the interest rate sensitive parts of the economy.
That was a nice segue for me, Gareth, because the next question I was going to ask you was on the Reserve Bank of Australia. Now, we did have the meet on Tuesday this week, and there was really a lot of heightened focus as we went into the RBA meeting, just given the volatility we've seen in financial markets, in particularly the bond market. So both in Australia and offshore, we have seen a lift in bond yields. I think market participants have been factoring in a strength in the economic recovery and have started to look at tightening financial conditions. How did the Reserve Bank of Australia react to that, and did we learn anything new from them at the March board meeting?
Yeah, look, it's a funny one. I mean, in February, the Reserve Bank announced an extension to their quantitative easing or their bond buying program of $100 billion over 6 months. And that surprised the market, not so much the amount, but the timing of that announcement. And at the time, the Reserve Bank would have been thinking, oh, we'll get on top of this early. We'll announce to the market early what we're intending to do there. That'll put downward pressure on yields. And as it's turned out, ever since they made that announcement, particularly over the last couple of weeks, bond yields have backed up significantly, particularly at the longer end. Some of that's driven by what's been happening offshore, absolutely. But it's also reflecting the fact that market participants here want to price in now the fact that the economic recovery is strong. Today's national accounts validated that view, and it's a natural response then for yields to back up. So sort of in one sense, Reserve Bank will be thinking, well, we clearly want the recovery to be strong. That's why we're doing all this. Then on the other hand, they don't want the kind of market to get ahead of itself and kind of for a tightening in financial conditions to occur that actually slows down or potentially results in the recovery not being as strong as it could be. So it's a hard one there. I mean, what they're basically trying to do, I think, is signal to the market that policy is going to remain highly accommodative. They continued this week with their forward guidance, which basically says the calendar-based forward guidance, which says, we don't think the conditions are going to be there in terms of inflation sustainably within the target, full employment, to raise the cash rate until 2024. I mean, that sort of helps to hold interest rates down at the very short end. But, the markets still want to price in that recovery. And as we've been highlighting for a while now, we think that the economic data is going to continue to come in better than they're expecting. I mean, even today's national accounts came in better than their forecasts implied in the February statement of monetary policy. And then at some stage, they'll have to do something about the target on the three-year bond. I mean, they don't want to do anything about it just yet. But I think with each passing month, with each further piece of evidence that we get that shows the economy is actually evolving better than they're forecasting, which is what they want at the end of the day. But they're just sort of caught between a rock and a hard place at the moment. In sounding and giving the signal that they intend to leave interest rates very, very low for a long time, while also having to acknowledge to some extent that this recovery is going very well at the moment and better than their forecasts imply.
I think what has also been impacting the market and also a heightened focus on the RBA is the housing market. So this week we got another reading about the strength of the housing market in Australia, both from a prices point of view but also from a lending point of view. Does that impact on the RBA's decisions and kind of what, as you said, what's next for the RBA? It has to be something around that three-year yield curve target.
Yeah, look, it's a really good point you raise, and it's one that we've been asked quite a bit about more recently.
Definitely.
I mean, and to be honest, it surprised the Reserve Bank, the strength of the housing market, both in terms of the recovery so far in prices and then also what we're seeing on the lending side, which is, you know, incredible in a lot of ways. I mean, lending has been rising really significantly. We saw this week figures that lending was up around 10% in January, and that sort of growth in lending means that prices are going to rise very, very quickly because obviously all the borrowed money goes directly into the housing market. So, yeah, we are getting some questions around, well, could that mean anything for Reserve Bank monetary policy? You know, doesn't mean that the central bank might have to think about raising interest rates earlier to cool the housing market, which is kind of ironic when you think about it, that it was not that long ago that the Reserve Bank was saying that rising house prices are part of the monetary policy transmission mechanism, and that it's a positive thing basically because people will feel better and spend more as a result. But you know, there's a little bit of a sense now out there that you can have too much of a good thing. And if prices are rising too quickly, certainly if it's accompanied by a lift in lending, then that could pose some problems. I think the best way to think about that at the moment is that, you know, the Reserve Bank has created this environment for a lift in lending and growth in house prices by virtue of the fact that interest rates are so low. And provided that the stock of debt doesn't increase too quickly and also that lending standards aren't loosened, then it won't have any impact on their decisions. And so what we found out last week in terms of the stock of credit is that even though, you know, growth in new lending has picked up significantly, the overall stock of debt isn't actually growing too quickly because what's kind of happening there is you've got a whole lot of households are going into the housing market. They're borrowing quite a bit of money. But then a whole lot of households that are carrying existing debt, they're actually using those lower interest rates to speed up debt repayment. And so overall, the stock of debt actually isn't growing too quickly at the moment. And that's really what the central bank cares about from a financial stability perspective. So, you know, our view is that basically this year we will see ongoing strength in new lending, strong growth in dwelling prices. And we talked about that on a podcast,
yes,
I think it was
did.
A couple of weeks ago.
The house price.
Yeah, but that's right. I mean, look, the data confirms that that's happening. But I think, you know, from a monetary policy perspective, you know, that they're not going to adjust their interest rate settings because of dynamics in the housing market. You know, if it turned out to be the case that, you know, the growth in the stock of debt was just happening too quickly, that's when I think you're thinking about APRA getting involved to bring in some macroprudential measures to slow that down. But even then, look, I think that's more likely to be a story for 2022 rather than this year. So, look, I think developments in the housing market will still get a lot of attention and it'll be naturally linked back to the level of interest rates. But I don't think it's going to feed into the Reserve Bank's policy decisions this year. What will really drive what they do is what's actually happening in the economy, where wages are going, what the level of unemployment looks like, and what that means for the outlook for inflation. From a cash rate perspective, that means that they're not doing anything on the cash rate side for several years, we think. But in terms of the three-year target or the target yield on the three-year government bond, we think that economic data will just continue to come in strong enough that the Reserve Bank Board themselves won't be convinced that the cash rate needs to be on hold for a further 3 years. At some point, if they wanted to keep that target yield on the three-year government bond, they need to shift the actual bond that they target. They'd have to shift it to the November 24 bond. We don't think they're going to do that. They've already had the opportunity in the past couple of weeks to do that, and they haven't. So we think there, by the time we get to the middle of this year or potentially a bit later, I mean, we've pegged it for August, but you know, the Reserve Bank will just lift that target on the three-year government bond. It's the easiest and cleanest solution. And all it means is that markets just go back to pricing in where they think the cash rate is going as opposed to the Reserve Bank trying to set it further out on the curve.
It's certainly going to be an interesting few months to watch how markets evolve, but also how the RBA continues its view on the economy. Gareth, appreciate your insights.
Lovely to have a chat. Thanks, Belinda.
Thanks. And you can read Gareth Aird's report on both the GDP print today and also the RBA on the 2nd of March on combankresearch.com.au.